Jaya, Shri Bhakti Vaibhavi Ki Jaya, Granta Raja, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya, Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jaya, Janita Gopri Manandi Hari Ki Jaya. Thank you all for coming. There's usually about 30 people here. It's very quiet. This is the last class for the year.
Oh.
Tomorrow they're doing their last exam. So.
People are studying for tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. Okay, so we'll finish off the chapter 19, which is the end of the sixth canto, and the Bhakti Vaibhava. So, all of you will definitely get good results in your exam because you turned up for the last class. This will not go unnoticed. But the others, then, I'll have to pray to Krishna for help. Okay, so we'll finish the chapter tonight. Tomorrow night we'll have the final exam, beginning at 7 o'clock, here in the theater. Performing the Kumsavana Vrat in order to attain a son. So we'll get to text 13. Mother Lakshmi, who is here, is a reservoir of all spiritual qualities, whereas you manifest and enjoy all these qualities. Indeed, you are actually the enjoyer of everything. You live as the supersoul of all living entities, and the goddess of fortune is the form of their bodies, senses, and minds. She also has a holy name and form, whereas you are the support of all such names and forms and the cause for their manifestation. I know she'll do the first part.
Madhava Acharya, the Acharya of the Tattvavadi, has described this verse in the following way. Vishnu is described as Yajna personified, and Mother Lakshmi is described as spiritual activities and the original form of worship. In fact, they represent spiritual activities and the super soul of all yajnas. Lord Vishnu is the super soul even of Lakshmi Devi, but no one can be the super soul of Lord Vishnu. For Lord Vishnu himself is the spiritual super soul of everyone.
Okay. So any points in the opening paragraph?
Devi is Jiva Tattva or Vishnu Tattva? That is the basic question. And according to Mahaprabhu, Lakshmi Devi is Vishnu Tattva because the Lord and His energies is absolute truth. So she is part of, there is no duality of the Lord and the energies. So she is Vishnu Tattva. That is the conclusion of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, she's actually, technically, she's actually in the third category, which Prabhupada doesn't mention in that paragraph. We'll discuss that.
She is Jiva Tattva.
No. There's another category.
What is that?
Shakti Tattva.
Okay.
We'll discuss it. We'll concentrate on this paragraph first. Any other point?
Like Radharani is also Shakti Tattva.
What's that?
Radharani is also Shakti Tattva.
Yeah, of course. Anything else? So, actually, I've got the wrong page. So just let me. Okay. So, according to the Bhagavatam, Lakshmi is the greatest worshipper of Narayan. Now, according to the Bhagavatam, as we study it in its entirety, when we get to the 10th canto, then. Just as Krishna is the source of Narayan, then And Srimati Radharani is the source of Lakshmi Devi. So she is the supreme goddess of fortune. She is Mahalakshmi. Just like Narayana is said to be the Mahapurush, or the Adi Purush, the original person, and she is the Mahalakshmi. She is the original Lakshmi. So when it comes to understanding Krishna's position, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and she is his supreme energy. So Krishna's energy is completely manifest in terms of Pladini Shakti, which means pleasure potency, in the form of Srimati Radharani. So Krishna, when he wants to have pleasure, then he expands himself as Radha. So Radha is the gopi who is with Krishna up here. She is the principal friend of Krishna, like that. So Krishna, in order to enjoy, he needs to manifest Radha. And when Radha is there, then he can enjoy completely. So even though, quite often we say the Lord is Atma Rama, but factually speaking, that is a description of the super soul. Because the Paramatma is Atma Rama, he is self-satisfied. But when it comes to Krishna, he is not actually Atma Rama, because he needs the association of his devotees, his consorts, in order to successfully satisfy himself. So Srimati Radharani is Krishna's pleasure potency. And it is only by her association that he can be completely satisfied. And actually, it is said that by Jiva Goswami that Srimati Radharani is so powerful that she alone can fully satisfy Krishna. Krishna doesn't even need anyone else to be fully satisfied. But in order to in order to share that experience, Srimati Radharani, she expands herself into many others. So you'll see that so many gopis are expanded, ultimately from Srimati Radharani. And so many jivas are expanded by Krishna's potency, so that they can also experience the sweetness that Radharani is tasting when she is in, when she's directly serving Krishna. So in order to get full satisfaction, then Radharani, she expands herself. And then, with so many people there, or so many devotees there, to serve Krishna simultaneously, the pleasure increases. Just like when two people are together, and then more come, and then more come, and more come, and the pleasure begins to increase. Like that. So they're all sharing that pleasure, ultimately, which is coming from Srimati Radharani. So she is Ladini Shakti. So all the pleasure that we are experiencing in devotional service, ultimately that is coming from her. It is by her blessings that we are able to experience bliss in devotional service. Because she is the source of that bliss. Devotional service gives pleasure to Krishna. She is the original servant of Krishna. And by assisting her in devotional service, because when we serve, even when we cook in the kitchen, Prabhupada said, actually Radharani is cooking. We are just assisting. Just like Bhuvaneshwar Prabhu was here recently. And he is the cook in the Krishna Balaram Mandir. He cooks the offerings for the deities for many, many years. So he said to me that I am just the spoon of Srimati Radharani. Just an assistant. Okay. So that is our position. We assist. And we get great pleasure in being the assistant of Radharani, who is the actual person who is giving Krishna pleasure in devotional service. Any points? Okay. So read the next.
You
have to speak up.
Krishna is mentioned as like Satchitananda. So Radharani and all these sakthis come under the chit potency or Ananda?
This would be Ladini, which is Ananda. But everyone in the spiritual world has Satchitananda form. Like everyone's form is a terminology knowledge and bliss, but she is the personification of Ladini Shakti. So specifically it says that that potency comes from her. or is personified. So my Devi Chakra is personified as Radharani. But everyone's form is such a Sachidananda, just like Krishna's form. Anything else? Okay. So read the next. Really? Do you want to read the next few paragraphs?
According to Madhvacharya, there are two tattvas or factors. One is independent and the other is dependent. The first tattva is the Supreme Lord Vishnu and the second is the Jiva tattva. Lakshmi Devi being dependent on Lord Vishnu is sometimes counted among the Jivas. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, however, describe Lakshmi Devi in accordance with the following two verses from the Pramaya Ratnavali of Paladeva Vidyabhushan. The first verse is a quotation from the Vishnu Purana. Nitya Ivasa Jagan Mata Vishnu Sri Anapaini Yata Sarva Gato Vishnu Tataivayam Dvijyottama Vishnu Siyu Saktiyas Tishras Tashu Ya Kivita Para Saiva Shrishtad Avineti Raha Sishyan Prabhur Maha. O best of the Brahmanas, Lakshmiji is the constant companion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, and therefore she is called Annapayini. She is the mother of all creation. As Lord Vishnu is all-pervading, his spiritual potency, Mother Lakshmi, is also all-pervading. Lord Vishnu has three principal potencies, internal, external and marginal. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted Parashakti, spiritual energy of the Lord, as being identical with the Lord. Thus, she is also included in the independent Vishnu Tattva. In the Kantimala commentary of the Premaya Ratnavali, there is this statement. I'll skip the Sanskrit. Although some authoritative Vaishnava disciplic successions count the goddess of fortune among the ever-liberated living entities in Vaikuntha, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in accordance with the statement of the Vishnu Purana, has described Lakshmi as being identical with the Vishnu Tattva. The correct conclusion is that the descriptions of Lakshmi as being different from Vishnu are stated when an eternally liberated living entity is imbued with the quality of Lakshmi. They do not pertain to Mother Lakshmi, the eternal consort of Lord Vishnu.
So, any points here?
This is what I was trying to say, that Mahaprabhu clarifies that.
I have read the purport also, and there is multiple sources. That's not the final conclusion. That's a one purport that Prabhupada's written. If you read all the books, Chaitanya Charitamrita especially, there's much more to be said about the subject. So, any other points?
One thing is that if Radharani is coming from Lord Krishna, in a way, she is Vishnu Tattva also.
Vishnu Tattva. In a way. It's not incorrect to say that. But we can give more intricate understanding. My God, Raj, what happened to you? So what? Any other points? So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will read about the Pancha Tattva, the five truths. So we understand there is Sri Krishna Chaitanya, who is non different from Krishna himself. He is combined form. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna, Nahi Anyu. So he is non different from, he is Krishna, but he has taken the mood and the complexion of Srimati Radharani. To experience the mood and the feelings, the sentiments of Radharani, then he has taken that particular form like that. Then there is Nityananda Prabhu, Prabhu Nityananda. So he is the first expansion, Balaram is the first expansion of Krishna. And from Balaram comes all the other expansions. From Balaram comes the Adi Chaturvyuha. Then from Sankarshan comes Narayan. From Narayan comes the second Chaturvyuha. And then from second Sankarsham, then comes Mahavishnu, and then the different Vishnus like that. So this is the expansions of the expansions of the expansions. All this is coming from Lord Nityananda, or Balaram originally. So he is also Vishnu Tattva. Then you have Advaita Acharya, who is also Vishnu Tattva. So Advaita Acharya is the combined form of Sadashiva and Mahavishnu. So this is also Vishnu Tattva. This is the expansion of the expansion of the expansion like that. Then, if you look on if you look on the Lord's right, then you have Vishnu expansions. If you look on the left, then you have Shakti Tattva, Yadadhar Pandit, and then you have Jiva Tattva, who is
Shivastava.
So Gadadhar is said to be an expansion of Srimati Radharani, or Radharani in another form. So in that form, that is the Shakti. Shakti means Shakti and Shaktiman. Shaktiman means
source.
Yeah, the source of the Shakti, like that. So Krishna is the Shaktiman. And the Shakti is Srimati Radharani. She is, as we said, Tadini Shakti. Samvit potency and Sandini Shakti, eternality and knowledge, that is coming from Balaram. Right? And from Radharani is coming Paladini of this, like that. She's the source of that. So she is Shakti Tattva. She's the energy of the Lord. So Prabhupada says in some lectures, he says, she is Krishna, as he says in this purport. But then technically speaking, she is the energy of Krishna. So Prabhupada explains the energy, and like the sun and the sun globe, sorry, the sun globe and the sunshine are not different. So the energy of the Lord and the Lord himself are not different. Yet, they are different. And one is the source, one is the energy. They're not the same, but they are the same. This is Achincha Beda, Beda Tattva. Then you have Jiva Tattva, who is Srivastaka, who is an incarnation of Narada, who is a pure devotee, a Jiva, like that, who is empowered by the Lord. Some Jivas can be empowered by Krishna. That is called Shakyavish. Narada is actually a Shakyavish avatar. He's an empowered incarnation. So technically, even though we say Tattva is, we say there's Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva, there is further Tattva as well, there's Shakti Tattva. And then there's Shiva Tattva. Shiva Tattva is said to also be a separate category, because Shiva is Vishnu, but he's not completely Vishnu.
Transformed.
As Bhat Brahma says, like milk turning into yogurt. So if you study the purport, it explains it, that Shiva is almost Vishnu. He's much greater than a Jiva, but he's almost Vishnu, not quite Vishnu. So this is called Shiva Tattva. Then we have Shakti Tattva, Jiva Tattva, Vishnu Tattva, Shakti, Jiva, Vishnu, Shiva. And then we have Nam Tattva. There's so many different tattvas which are there. And these things are difficult to understand. They're complicated. They're intricate. So it's an intricate science. It's not a simple understanding. It takes a great deal of study to understand it all in its entirety. So Chaitanya Charitamrita gives a great deal of explanation about these different tattvas so that we can understand the absolute truth in five features. Prabhupada says, the Supreme Lord in five features. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Sri Vas. Then you can understand the absolute truth in five features. So, any points?
Nam Tattva is same in Vishnu Tattva?
No, Nam Tattva is a different thing. It's about, specifically, it's truth about, or knowledge about the Holy Name. Abhinitvai Nam and Nam Inum. The name is non-different from Krishna. Nam Tattva.
So Nam Tattva becomes Vishnu
Tattva. But depends whose name you're saying.
Krishna.
If you're saying Radha, then that's not Vishnu Tattva necessarily, that's Shakti. So even Nam Tattva is a science as well. It's a little complicated. Any other points?
Also, Jivana Mahaprabhu, this past time we see Advaita Acharya was half Vishnu and half Sadashiva, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was like Krishna and Radha combined. So how does that work? Like how this tattvas, because they are totally different tattvas, but they are in one personality. How does that work?
Shankar comes from Shankar.
But in Advaita Acharya, it's a one personality. It's a mixture of two different tattvas. Same as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's a mixture of different tattvas.
Yeah, and then if you get a, you say like Mahaprabhu's associates, it's said to be a combined form of a number of different figures, one or two or even three or four.
But most of the others are like jiva tattvas, or so that can be understood, but this is...
Are you talking about specific about Advaita?
Advaita Acharya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya is different. That's a different thing. Because that's Krishna with the complexion of Radharani and the mood of Radharani. But it's Krishna.
Yes.
But it's just the complexion. But then when you have Advaita Acharya, he is the combined form of Sadashiva and Mahavishnu. The Sadashiva is Vishnu, Narayan in Vaikuntha. There's a form of Narayan in Vaikuntha who's called Sadashiva. That's the original form of Shiva. That's actually Narayan. That's not Shiva Tattva. It's Vishnu Tattva. So Sadashiva and Mahavishnu are Vishnu Tattva. Both of them. So it's only Vishnu Tattva. It's not Shiva Tattva. Although it is Shiva Tattva, but it's Narayan is the source of Shiva Tattva. When Narayan comes into this world as Shiva, then it becomes mixed. And the difference is that Vishnu or Narayan, Vishnu Tattva never touches the material energy, whereas Shiva does, as Parvati. So then there's some contamination takes place. So it's the Lord, doesn't lose any potency. Practically, he's not quite as powerful as Vishnu, but practically he's supremely effective, Mahadev. But he's touched Parvati, so there's a little, says, contamination there. So, whereas Vishnu never touches the material energy directly. Does that make sense? Any other points? It's quite technical. Well, this will be in your exams.
Have you just stuck with this?
Only you will understand it.
Mm-hmm. What is the, when you say contamination, why does it happen, or what is the purpose of
it? I'll explain to you later. This class is has been running for 9 years, so it's obviously not beginner stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you probably won't understand most of it. But those things I'll understand later, because that's a different kind of discussion. Any other points?
So we ask you about Haridas Thakur. Okay. It's Brahma, Lord Brahma. Haridas Thakur.
Who else?
No, that's it.
Yeah, Haridas Thakur is an incarnation of Brahma.
Because of her, he's also a mixture of Lord Brahma as well as Vishnu, so that's one of those. Shiva and Brahma mix.
No, one of the class we said it is Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Brahma.
Yeah, that's right. Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Brahma.
He has an extreme patience like Prahlad Maharaj to tolerate. You said he's like Brahma because he can concentrate.
I don't think I said that.
No.
There's Vasudev. There's one associate of Mahaprabhu.
He's Prahlad Maharaj.
Yeah, he's said to be an incarnation of Prahlad. Vasudev Datta, Prahlad, yes. And I think someone else simultaneously. But Haridas Thakur is said to be an incarnation of Prahlad.
Because recently I heard he's a mixture of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Brahma.
You only said in the past.
No, I didn't say. I didn't say. You have to say, I haven't heard that. Okay. You are both the supreme rulers and benedictors of the three worlds. Therefore, my Lord, Uttama Shloka, May my ambitions be fulfilled by your grace. Sri Shukadev Goswami continued, thus when one should worship Lord Vishnu, who is known as Srinivas, along with Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, by offering prayers according to the process mentioned above. After removing all the paraphernalia of worship, one should offer them water to wash their hands and mouths, and then one should worship them again. Thereafter, with devotion and humility, one should offer prayers to the Lord and Mother Lakshmi. Then one should smell the remnants of the food offered, and then again worship the Lord and Lakshmi Ji. Accepting her husband as the representative of the Supreme Person, a wife should worship him with unalloyed devotion by offering him prasad. The husband, being very pleased with his wife, should engage himself in the affairs of his family.
The family relationship of husband and wife should be established spiritually according to the process mentioned above.
Thank you. Any points?
In the verse, text 16, translation of verse, one should smell the remnants of food offered. So what is the significance of this?
In 16?
16, text 16. One should smell the remnant of the food offered and then again worship Lord.
I didn't read the commentary by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, so I'm not sure if there's something mentioned. When we smell prasad, it purifies us. Just by smelling the prasad, you become purified. So maybe it's mentioning that one should not eat at this point in time because one's in the middle of the worship or something. So I'm not sure what it means. Maybe Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says something. I didn't read it.
It's a very simple question. In text 15, it says, for Srinivas, Sri and Vas. Do you know why it is? I've always heard it as Srinivas is one, but I didn't realize. What is a Nivas in it?
Gupta Nivas.
Where's yours? Oh, like the residence of
Sri. Keeps the goddess of fortune on the chest. It says that Krishna, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, she performed tapasya for thousands of years in one forest in Vrindavan called Bilvavan or Srivan. She performed austerity there for thousands of years so that she could enter into the Rasa Lila. But she could not break her mood of being the goddess of fortune. She could not enter fully the mood of a gopi. Because only the gopis can dance with Krishna. So, because she could not overcome her mood of being the goddess of fortune, then she was given the position as a little blonde tuft of hair on Krishna's chest, which is called Sri Vatsa. So she's always there, and she witnesses all the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, but she herself cannot enter and become a gopi. Any other points?
There's a temple in Vrindavan. This is a Gopi story. What is
it? Yeah, on the other side of the Jamuna.
Yeah.
The western side. Eastern side. Then she performs austerities there. Any other points? So, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out the relationship between the husband and wife. It should be established spiritually according to the process mentioned above. So, as we have explained in previous classes this year and other years, that the relationship between the husband and wife, it should not be based on too much attachment or too much detachment for it to work successfully in spiritual life. Because if we're too attached to the wife or too attached to the husband, then we cannot progress spiritually. If we're not attached enough to the wife or not attached enough to the husband, then there will not be sufficient affection exchange. And then either one or both will feel materially dissatisfied, and that will also cause problems. So both have to be there. So it is recommended that when it comes to dealing with the husband and wife, that you should not be too attached or too detached. There has to be the right amount of affection. So Prabhupada says the relationship between the husband and wife should be very loving and affectionate. And this will help us to progress in our Krishna consciousness. If there's a cooperation or a partnership in order to advance in Krishna consciousness, they should assist each other and inspire each other to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. And then we can go back and back to Godhead, even from the greenhouse to ashram. It is possible. Any points?
In the early years of this book, it says here he should engage himself in the affairs of his family, which means house. And so the early years of this book, the videos I've seen, and the videos I've read, it was not always possible to have that kind of arrangement because both were involved in heavy preaching activities. Is that something still recommended as years go on? Because we notice that that part can come down, the preaching part can come down because of those responsibilities. So if you do have that kind of connection,
you can do it as a partnership. I mean, you see the nice example of Churu Prabhu and Vaibhavi Mataji. They run the temple in Utah. They built that big temple in Utah, the Utah Krishnas. So they built that big temple. And they've been building that temple for over 20 years, probably 30 years. They've been preaching there. It took them like at least 20 years just to be able to build that temple. So they're just a husband and wife who are working together cooperatively, and they're fully absorbed in spreading Krishna consciousness or developing Krishna consciousness in that part of the world. So generally we see when people have children, then children take a lot of time. So generally, you'll see that the grihastha couples who don't have children, they can absorb themselves in preaching much more easily. But when one has children, then one's primary responsibility is to bring the children up in Krishna consciousness. So it may limit your time on what you can actually spend, unless you're very powerful and very advanced, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He had 8 children, but then he was very absorbed in preaching. Because his wife was so powerful, she was maintaining the family. Does that answer something? Any other points?
Also, in one of the earlier books, I think chapter 18, probably or 19, I'm not really sure, where he says, for a devotee to be successful in his grihastha life, better that he gets trained in the Brahmachari ashram before he comes into the grihastha. That training will help him have a successful family.
And you mentioned one of the classes that if you miss the Brahmachari life, then you have catch up.
A lot of catch up. Yeah, it's a big advantage going through the ashram if you can do it. And if you don't, then you have to get that training, which means you have to work on it during your grihastha lives. Any other points? Between the husband and wife, one person is sufficient to execute this devotional service. Because of their good relationship, both of them will enjoy the result. Therefore, if the wife is unable to execute this process, the husband should carefully do so, and the faithful wife will share the result.
The relationship between husband and wife is firmly established when the wife is faithful and the husband sincere. Then, even if the wife, being weaker, is unable to execute devotional service with her husband, if she is chaste and sincere, she shares half of her husband's activities.
Any points?
I think it's safe that one should not be in the idea of one shouldn't be too sad or dejected if the other one's weak. Weak meaning you can either help them or if you feel they are unable to execute the process, either because of their interest or the other person should not give up that emotional state. They should continue. So that part where you said that you must not be too attached to
Prabhupada mean by saying husband should be sincere. Sincere to what? Sincere to devotional service or sincere to the wife? What do you think?
Means sincere to serving the Guru. Specifically. Husband serves the Guru and the wife serves the husband. That's the traditional system. Any other points? In devotional service, it doesn't always work that the partner is on the same level of advancement or enthusiasm in devotional service. But still, as long as that partner does not impede one in their in your devotional service. In other words, they can be supported. Even they can't practice it themselves, they don't have the taste to practice it themselves, but still they do not impede your devotional service or your progress, and they support you. And they give all facility so that you can advance in Krishna consciousness. Then they get half of the advancement. So it's a very powerful situation.
Or if they have children, the other half takes care of the family and one takes care of the children. Somebody has to take care of the children, so the other person may not be able to spend so much time in devotional service. And hence, the other person, one person takes up the seriously the process of devotional service, and the other person takes care of the family, then also the other person who's taking care of the family will get 50% of the devotional service.
And if one brings up the children to become Krishna conscious, then that is devotional service. It's what advances. So even if they may not have so much enthusiasm, but generally we see, I've seen many times, you know, in ISKCON over the years, that sometimes the parents are not so enthusiastic about devotional service, but as soon as they have children, they want the best thing for the children, so then they become enthusiastic because they try to help the kids become Krishna conscious. So that's an impetus in the material world. Children are a great impetus for the parents to advance, actually. And even sometimes I've seen men who are struggling to be devotees, and then they get married and the wife's very enthusiastic, and then suddenly they become very enthusiastic. So because of our material attachments, a karma sava karma va, even if we have material attachments, but if we dovetail that in Krishna service, that can be a purifying step or a purifying relationship. So sometimes being a parent or being a husband or being a wife, it can be a great impetus to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Because we dovetail our material attachments in Krishna service. So, any points?
And I suppose in their case, they're all alone in the forest. We have a very thriving community, and so many devotees and so many programs. This weakness can easily be overcome with this association and all these programs. And so there's no real reason for wanting to increase it, because unless we are devotees, it's not so many things, good friends.
Yeah, there isn't any excuse. The Chaitanya Charitamrita says nothing material can stop our spiritual progress or advancement. There's nothing material which can impede Krishna consciousness cannot be impeded by anything material. You see, in the past, even devotees in the former Soviet Union, they were thrown into jail, into concentration. It didn't stop them practicing Krishna consciousness. So there's nothing material that can stop you from being a devotee. Even Sanatana Goswami, Haridas Thakur, they were thrown in jail at different points in time. But it didn't stop them from becoming Krishna conscious. Haridas Thakur made the jail into devotees. He actually gave them a blessing. He said, all of you stay here. You all stay in jail. It's good. Because then you can't get in trouble by going out into the material world. So just practice Krishna consciousness in this situation. So that is the potency of the advanced devotees. So there's nothing material which can stop us. But even though there's nothing material, the mind is very powerful. So you see, some devotees, even when they're surrounded by good association and there is all favorable circumstances for them to advance in Krishna consciousness, because their mind is weak, then they don't take advantage of it and they don't advance. But still, if they're married to a partner who is strong, then they get half the benefit. That is their great good fortune. So they should appreciate that and they should be supported. Any other points? One should accept this Vishnu Vrata, which is a vow in devotional service, and should not deviate from its execution to engage in anything else. By offering the remnants of prasad, flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, and ornaments, one should daily worship the brahmanas and worship women who peacefully live with their husbands and children. Every day the wife must continue following the regulative principles to worship Lord Vishnu with great devotion. Thereafter, Lord Vishnu should be laid in his bed, and then one should take prasad. In this way, husband and wife will be purified and will have all of their desires fulfilled. The chaste wife must perform such devotional service continuously for 1 year. After 1 year passes, one should fast on the full moon day in the month of Kartik, October, November. On the morning of the next day, one should wash oneself, and after worshipping Lord Krishna as before, one should cook as one cooks for festivals, as stated in the Gita Sutras. Sweet rice should be cooked with ghee, and with this preparation, the husband should offer oblations to the fire 12 times. Thereafter, he should satisfy the brahmanas. When the satisfied brahmanas bestow their blessings, he should devotedly offer them respectful obeisances with his head, and with permission he should take prasad. Before taking his meal, the husband must first seat the acharya comfortably, and along with his relatives and friends should control his speech and offer prasad to the guru. Then the wife should eat the remnants of the oblation of sweet rice cooked with ghee. Eating the remnants ensures a learned, devoted son and all good fortune. If this vow or ritualistic ceremony is observed according to the description of Shastra, even in this life a man will be able to achieve all the benedictions he desires from the Lord. A wife who performs this ritualistic ceremony will surely receive good fortune, opulence, sons, a long-living husband, a good reputation, and a good home.
In Bengal, even today, if a woman lives for a long time with her husband, she is considered very fortunate. A woman generally desires a good husband, good children, a good home, prosperity, opulence, and so on. As recounted in this verse, a woman will receive all the desirable benedictions, and a man will also be able to receive all benedictions from Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, by performing this particular type of vrat, a man and a woman in Krishna consciousness will be happy in the material world, and because of being Krishna conscious, they will be promoted to the spiritual world.
Any points? This vrata takes 1 year, and it finishes on the full moon in Kartik. Any other points?
Today is the full moon.
Yeah. I think think it's the next form in which it is considered the Kartik Purnima. I think, or maybe it's today, it's one of the others. Any other points?
So, it is emphasized that in this material world, one should live happily and contentedly, or one should be content and one should be happy. One should satisfy one's material desires in Krishna consciousness and should live with the family in a materially satisfying way. In other words, one should aspire to be happy in this material world. Just like one time, Devamrita Swami and Burajan Prabhu, they went to do a home program together. And Burajan Prabhu said to Devamrita Swami, he said, when I preach to grihasthas, he said, I always tell them to be happy in a world where there is no happiness. So this is the way we preach in the material world. Be happy, be satisfied. But there's no happiness there anyway. So if you can do it, then that's very, that's good. If you can do it. If you can live happily in this world, peacefully, if you can be content, if you can satisfy your material desires, and at the same time advancing Krishna consciousness, that's wonderful. But quite often we see for devotees it doesn't work like that. Even though you try to be happy in the material world, it just doesn't work. The material world is not a place of happiness. So we can try to satisfy ourselves in the material world, but that's up to Krishna. It's up to our past karma whether or not that happens. Whether or not we will be happy or unhappy, that's already predestined. So the main emphasis for the devotee is just to be Krishna conscious, to focus on one's spiritual life, to advance in Krishna consciousness. So if you can do things materially successfully and at the same time simultaneously you can spiritually progress, then that is perfect. But the main emphasis should be on our spiritual advancement, because sometimes materially things just don't work out for us. We should not compromise our spiritual advancement at any time. Don't let your material circumstances stop your spiritual progress, even though they try to.
Lord Krishna says, Dukhalaya Shashatam, follow misery and tremble. So happiness is a dream we have in material.
Yeah, Prabhupada says that. Bhagavatam says that also. Any other points?
Is there a big difference between the kind of vow that they take here and the kind of vow we take as people, in a sense? Here, there is the result is material happiness, having good fortune, opulence, all these things. Whereas when we take the vow of the Mahamantra to chant that senselessly, there's no material expectation. Here, there is a tangible thing, you will get this. When Narada Muni tells Chitraketu, you do this 7 days, you will see this outcome. As devotees, we just want to chant to the best of our ability. Huge difference. So I suppose the Bhagavan is taking us to that stage.
Yeah, well, this is a Vishnu vow. The whole point of this month, 1 month throughout the Pumsavana Brat, which is to be performed over a year actually, it is to satisfy the Lord. That is the point. But you'll see in the Bhagavatam, at the end of so many of the pastimes, at the end of the pastime of Rahadev and different pastimes, whenever you finish, there is a phala stuti, which means they give some benedictions. So quite often it says, if you repeat this pastime, then you will, your life will lengthen, you'll get a long duration of life, you'll get riches, you'll get material happiness, all these things. Even in the Bhagavatam, these benedictions are given. So even though our emphasis is actually on devotional services, on pleasing Krishna, but it says that at the house of bhakti, dharma, artha, karma, and moksha stand as maidservants outside the house.
Folded hands.
With folded hands, yeah, ready to serve the devotee.
So when one begins to do devotional service in dharma, artha, wealth, opportunities for satisfaction, sense gratification, and ultimately moksha, then they will be given to the devotee automatically. So that's the potency of bhakti that all mature desires may, by Krishna's desire, you may get those things. Or Krishna may do the opposite, he may take all those things away from you. He'll deal with each devotee according to their needs.
This is also bhakti. This is also bhakti.
Yeah, because Kashyapa, remember, if you read the past one, Kashyapa was saying that you perform this Vishnu vow, or this Vaishnava Vrat, to purify your consciousness. So you read it, it's about purifying. It's about, but then automatically, in the course of serving Krishna, then you get material benefits, which is a fact, that when we serve Krishna, material benefits automatically come. It's a side product.
The other point is, look at my own family, not the one here, but back home, the extended family.
Where do you come from?
Kerala.
Kerala. It's a nice place. Where'd you come from?
I thought it was nice.
What's that?
I thought it was a nicer place.
Really? You didn't read the travel portions?
You could be a farmer if you're
really? Your family and farmers?
Yeah.
We should go back there now.
Bananas, coconuts.
Really? Cody also has like 8 acres there. Out in the middle of...
Under
it, yeah. And he said they grow everything there.
I think for a good part of my life, the only thing we had to buy was sugar, salt and spices. Everything else was...
Really?
Rice, meat, banana, all the vegetables. Cows,
really?
Never
happened. And you came here? You know, Prabhupada, he went to Surat. He was preaching, and he went up there. And he noticed all the farmers. Like, he went for a walk in the morning around the town, on the outskirts of the town. And all the crops were tobacco. So then when Prabhupada was giving his lectures the next few days, he's saying, you know, what is the point of your farming? He said, you just grow all this tobacco and then you send it off to a far place and sell it and you get the money to buy your food. I mean, you just grow your food here on the same land. He said, mm-hmm. What's the point? So Prabhupada was pointing, what's the point?
But the communists took over and they bought it up.
What happened?
The communists? That meant the joint family had to break up because of the joint. Everyone had to move to the city.
When did that happen?
Somewhere 1979, I think. We still have, but not as big as what we kept the whole
family. But still, there's not just subsist.
Yeah.
What was your question?
The question was, I can see that many of them, they like to perform it to austerities like this. You tell them to chant 4 rounds or 8 rounds or 16 rounds for a whole year, they'll think long enough. If you give them a tough vow, you have to do this for a year, do all these things and all that, regulations and games, they get more motivated. So I suppose there is a class of people who likes that kind of runs.
Yeah, people are just into different things. Just like Chaitanya was telling me that some of the people on the weekend go to his program because it was Durga Puja, so they went to the Durga Mandir. So even though they're learning about bhakti, but still people are, they have their sentiments. So they think, oh, you have to do this and you have to do that and you have to worship this and you have to worship that, and then, you know, but they don't understand. Just by worshipping Krishna, everything else is done. You just come here and worship Radha Balaban and everything's done. You don't have to do anything else. They still have some sentiment. Even people who worship Radha Balaban, sometimes they think, oh, I have to do this ceremony and that ceremony and
worship that one, and you know, Shivaratri or Durga Puja, but actually it's not necessary.
And just like giving, just like giving water to the root, the whole plant gets to it. We don't have to worship anything.
Any other points?
Yeah.
What about the
Bhagavad
Gita?
Prabhupada went there in 77, actually, I think it was, just before he left the world. And I'm just trying to remember the pastime of what happened. I have to refresh myself. But I think what happened is that Prabhupada said, because the water is a little far away, so Prabhupada said, give me some water from the Trivani. So they got the water, and then I think they brought it back to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada just tipped it on the ground. I think that I have to, don't quote me on that perfectly because I have to recheck that. I haven't heard that for a long time, but I think he did that. In other words, devotees can go there because it's the Trivani. It's the Ganga, Saraswati and Jamuna. So for us it's a sacred place, it's a sacred time like that. But Prabhupada's main emphasis on going to Kumbh Mela was to preach. That was his main reason. To go and chant and just distribute prasadam and books. He wasn't so concerned about taking the bath like that. Because he said that devotees are already liberated. So we don't have to go there and take bath to become liberated. We automatically get moksha. So we don't have to go there to get moksha. So.
Any other
points? Okay.
You didn't tell me you had that one.
Sorry?
You couldn't tell me you had that one. Good to know those things. We may need that land in due course of time. Because if the world deteriorates, you know, it's better we all just go back down and just, you know, sink it. It's already there. It's already, you can grow everything in those places. And we can actually satisfy all our material needs. Yeah, we should take it seriously, but no one is. As long as Cole's a safe way, then no one takes it seriously. No one takes it seriously. Even on the farm, they don't take it seriously. Yeah, they'll just go down to Cole's and buy the vegetables. We'll only take it seriously when there's no food. It actually happened in Cuba. I watched an interesting documentary about Cuba. Because they had a falling out with the Soviet Union, who used to supply all of their oil. So overnight, they lost petroleum, basically. So they had to buy 2 million bicycles from China, because they just didn't have petrol. So everyone couldn't keep driving cars. And they had to, because they didn't have petrol, they couldn't drive the tractors, diesel. So that suddenly everyone had to just start planting their own vegetables. So overnight, basically they just started their own fruit economy again, like that. Because they did that for thousands of years anyway, but then suddenly, you know, when it was forced upon them once again, everyone started a very interesting documentary. People had to grow their food. So it's only when you get to that point, that's when everyone, in Australia, everyone will get serious. You know, and they'll go out on the nature strip, you know, that whole nature strip out there. You know, you have so much fruit on that nature strip just out there, you know, we have so much fruit there. Yeah, but they won't do it until there's a problem. And there's no petrol or something, then everyone will go and start growing food. There's a solar eclipse on November the 14th. And the Mayan calendar finishes on December the 21st. So.
watched it about a month ago.
Yeah, I haven't watched it, but I have heard about it. I need to do it.
I might have it at the farm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might have, because my friend, she gave it to us. I might have given it back. But if it's there, you can watch it. I've got another good one at the moment, actually. At the farm. I can't remember what it's, but it's something about pig oil or something. Okay. If an unmarried girl observes this rite, she will be able to get a very good husband. If a woman who is a vira, who has no husband or son, executes this ritualistic ceremony, she can be promoted to the spiritual world. A woman whose children have died after birth can get a child with a long duration of life and also become very fortunate in possessing wealth. If a woman is unfortunate, she will become fortunate, and if ugly, she will become beautiful. By observing this rut, a diseased man can gain relief from his disease and have an able body with which to work. If one recites this narration while offering oblations to the pitas and demigods, especially during the Shraddha ceremony, the demigods and inhabitants of Pitriloka will be extremely pleased with him and bestow upon him the fulfillment of all desires. After one performs this ritualistic ceremony, Lord Vishnu and his wife, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, are very pleased with him. O King Parikshit, now I have completely described how Diti performed this ceremony and had good children, the Maruts, and a happy life. I have tried to explain this to you as elaborately as possible. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 19th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Performing the Pumsavana Ritualistic Ceremony. Shiva Prabhupada.
Ijai.
Shiva Prabhupada.